Can I just come back on that? I just want to make it crystal clear to everyone in this room about the composition of the EU. Right, okay. In this country, I appreciate it's a flawed system. It doesn't make anyone particularly happy. In this country, we can actually vote for who represents us. We can vote for a councillor. Perhaps we like their policies. Perhaps we know them. We can vote for an MP. Perhaps we like them. Perhaps we know their policies. We can vote for them. And because we can vote for them, they have to listen to us. They may not like it, but they have to listen to what we have to say. We can also remove them. We can remove them at the next election. We can remove them if their behaviour is inappropriate. So we can vote them in. They have to listen to us. We remove them. The EU law is created by the EU Commission. We have no say in who's selected. They do not have to listen to us, and we cannot remove them. They can do whatever they like. Hence now they're paying $3.5 billion package to South America. I don't know why or whatever, but there we are. More money going from our poor going to South America. It won't be going to the poor of South America, of course. It's probably going to the organised crime of South America. But there we are. It is not a democracy. The EU Commission dictates the law. It is then handed, passed through committee. It then goes to the European Parliament, who are like the House of Lords. That is the situation. It's very different from the United Kingdom. We have always had parliamentary... Well, we haven't always. We've had a very, very long history of parliamentary democracy in this country. The countries who comprise the EU do not. We've got France with the Petain government. We have Spain with Franco. We have Portugal with Salazar. We have Greece with the three colonels. We have Italy with Mussolini. Of course, we've got Germany with Hitler. We've got the whole of the Soviet... I'm sorry, but there is Hitler. Well, he existed. We can't pretend he didn't exist. And we've got all the ex-Soviet blocs. These countries simply do not have... They don't have the democratic DNA that we have. It's simply a democratic system that does not work for us, and we should have no part of it. We can work with it, but not be in it.
Okay, the gentleman here.
A couple of things. I almost cringe, you know, when I say I'm a socialist and I have a lot of sympathies with UKIP, you know. But there's a couple of points I wanted to bring you up on. About this sort of Europe thing, you know, I mean, there are power structures, you know, that operate on a sort of local, national and international level, you know, and I just can't help but feel, whilst I agree with a lot of what you said about the failings of Europe and stuff, that we need to be inside, you know, in order to influence change, you know, and, you know, I'm not sure isolating ourselves is the best policy, whilst I know that it's corrupt and there are, you know, I mean, I just go off on the sideline, for example. I'm a builder, I'm a plasterer, you know, and I've had my wages, you know, halved in the last 10 years because of immigration. But if I was them, I'd do the same thing.
Of course, it's no criticism of the ordinary citizen.
I can't blame them individually,
no.
You know what I mean?
It's
just economic, people making economic decisions for themselves, you know. It's unfortunate it's hit the construction industry and the service industry a lot. More broadly, I want to pick you up on a European arrest warrant and what is the cost of justice, you know? There is a cost to justice. We have to pay for it, you know, and it's expensive, you know. But I think justice is one of the leading arms of an intelligent, advanced democracy. I did disagree with you hugely about the European arrest warrant and stuff. And I think we've got to just accept that it's expensive and it needs to be done, and nobody should be above the law, and we all are subject to the law. And I think that's a democratic pillar that is massively expensive and needs to be adhered to,
I know, laudable aims. However, I think you've slightly missed the point of what I'm saying about the European arrest warrant. I'm saying UK doesn't need it, and it is fundamentally unjust. I'll explain again why I'm saying it's fundamentally unjust. In this country, we have judicial discretion. Let's say, for instance, I go up the road, I go to Sainsbury's, I come out with a packet of pasta I haven't paid for, right? The police may decide, well, whether to arrest me or charge me or not. We have discretion. Yeah. It may go to the court. The court may look at it and think, for God's sake, it's only a packet of pasta. You know, why do you want to ruin it? Right, there are issues here. I'm not going to proceed with it. There are a lot of judicial discretion. The problem
You will have an opportunity. No, I'm sorry, stop there. You will have an opportunity to come back later. Excuse me. No, please, will you desist? You will have an opportunity to come back later because I want everyone to have a say. Yep.
Okay.
I'm sorry, there are other people who want to speak.
That's the level it's at. What I'm saying, right, what you've got to understand is in our lower criminal courts, and one day when I've got the time and energy, I would really like to serve an FOI on the Ministry of Justice to find out exactly what proportion of time is taken up in the lower criminal courts with European arrest warrants. Remember, this is hogging our court time, taking up our police, taking up our judicial time. Right, what I'm saying is this. In this country, we have a sense of what appropriateness. We have a sense of proportionality. Now, in Europe, that's not such the case, right? So, let's say about 10 years ago, we get a lot of European arrest warrants coming over. As I said, like, a Romanian man stole 5 pence in Bucharest. A British judge would look at the quality of the evidence, say, well, where's the evidence showing he stole this? And, you know, come on, it's trivial. So the judge would say, I'm not pursuing this, you can't have the man. The man is not going to be sent to Bucharest. This is stupid. This is what the judges could say about 10 years ago in this country, which is fair, right and proportional. However, the EU got so annoyed that we're interfering with their process. It's not about administration of justice, it's about their processing numbers, that they removed judicial discretion. So now, you know, the judge comes on, sees this, oh, right, okay, well, it looks like Janusz has been charged with stealing a baseball cap in Poland. Ah, well, ordinarily, I'd say this is junk and I wouldn't send it back in the past. But now he has no power to do that. He has to rubber stamp it and say, right, police go get Janusz and send him back to deal with it. Right, so you see what I'm saying? Judicial discretion's removed. We have no say. We can't protect people. Do you understand?
Yeah.
We're having people, poor people. These are poor people. The rich will look after themselves. We're talking about ordinary poor people, trivial crimes abroad, processed here. Ordinarily, they would have the right to be heard. They would have judicial input and judicial. They'd weigh up. That's gone. The EU took that away and says, no, take him back. We've got no kind. There's no kindness. There's no leeway. It's gone. Right. Now, if I can just compare, right, our common law system, the criminal law, as opposed to the European Roman law system, right? In this country, we've got habeas corpus. You have to be charged within 24 to 96 hours of being charged. You follow, right? Roman law, you can be detained indefinitely, right? Okay? We have trial by jury in this country, so people have an input and can decide whether what's fair, whether it's fair or not. Again, Roman law, it's going to be judiciary. It can be trial by one judge only. Right, we have a presumption of innocence in this country. Not so with Roman law. Okay, we have no hearsay. You can't use hearsay evidence in this country to condemn people. You can't say, oh well, my friend down the road said that Doris said that he saw him coming out and had blood all over his hands. You can't use that. Can't use that in this country. That's fair. That's right. It has to be very good quality of evidence. Abroad, you can. In Europe, you can. We have press restriction in this country. There can be no speculation or discussion about criminal cases. I'm sure you've heard all this stuff about Facebook and jury members being charged for contempt of court for discussing the case with Facebook. You can't do that at all in this country. In continental Europe, under Roman law, you can. You can have press speculation. You can set bets if you want. And in this country, you can only go through a criminal trial if you actually attend the court. The accused has to be in court. Under Roman law, no. And I assure you, the European law will succeed. We give way on every point. Tolerance is a one-way street with the EU, and we will do what the EU tells us to do. All right, so the EU, as I said before, the way they make laws is the Commission, We have no power who is in the commission and it goes down our line. We don't need to be part of it. It's of no influence. Sorry, I don't mean to shout. Please forgive me. I'm saying, my argument is, we have no influence. We only have 9.5% MEPs, right, in the European Parliament. We have about 10% European commissioners concerning laws. Each time a country is added, our influence is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. It's a dead loss for us. We have the Anglosphere. We have the entire rest of the world. Why are we sort of inward looking all the time? Let's look at the world.
Sorry, we've actually been there. We've been there. So can we move on? Because I want to make sure that this is for the floor, basically, now. So can I just make sure that we get everyone to speak? Bill, you wanted to respond as well.
I just had one, a small point on this. I mean, two things. First, I think we have to be very clear that the European Court of Justice has nothing to do with the EU. I don't want to have to spend my time picking up on small points of fact. And I'm having to work from memory because I obviously haven't been revising the case. But I think this is relevant to what I was saying earlier, which is that the American extradition treaty that everyone got up in arms about the last couple of years ago is precisely that we no longer have to have courts reviewing extradition. If the US says that they want someone, the British state will hand them over and off they go to the states to stand trial there. Now, the point that... And this is why this is very relevant. The point is that's nothing to do with the EU. That's nothing to do with being part of any supranational organisation. That is that the world's foremost nuclear superpower has come along and had a quiet word with the British government and said, we want to be able to pick up anyone we want. And the British government has gone, OK. Because in a world that is divided by military power and economic power, you cannot have freedom and independence because the power will be exerted over you, no matter what. So you'd find that you'd have something, the Anglosphere would be a very one-sided international organisation.
OK, here first, yeah.
No, I didn't want to make this point, but you've said twice about something which is wrong about the common market. I didn't want to make the point, because I don't appear to be a defender of the common market, but I think you have to sort of refute the idea that common market is responsible for all evils when it's capitalism. I mean, Bill has just pointed out that the European Court of Human Rights, which is all about these life sentences, it's nothing to do with the common market. It's part of the Council of Europe. And you've said about three times that it's the Commission that makes the law. It's not the Commission that makes the law in Europe. It's the Council of Ministers. And who are the Council of Ministers? They're ministers from all the member states. So European law is not made by the Commission. It's made by the governments of the various member states. What they want to do, when Europe makes an unpopular decision, they come back and say, "Why didn't make the decision? Europe made that decision." So it's an attempt. Europe has become a scapegoat, and that's what's happening in this country at the moment. Yeah. That's what's going to happen in this election. But the real scapegoat, well, not scapegoat, the real cause of all these things is capitalism, whether you're in the common market or out of the common market. It'll be the same, but you haven't got your basic facts right. I don't appear to be a defender of the common market by saying it isn't quite as bad as you make it out, but it still happens it isn't.
If I could come back on that, in 1972, the European Communities Act brought in Aquis Communautaire. That means all our native laws are now subservient to EU law, right? That came in 1972. In order to be a member of the EU, you have to accept and abide by the ECJ judgments. So we are tied into that, and that's a fact. Also, it's no longer a common market. In 1972, it was a common market. That was the philosophical understanding and fundamental basis of that. However, that changed, and in 1992, it became a union. We are now a union. It's not a common market. It's not about finance. It's a union. It's a philosophical and ideological union, which enables the free movement of low-paid labour around continental Europe. For instance, if we look at trafficking of women, there's been a huge upsurge now, even in this year, with Romanian women being trafficked into London, which is freely done because we don't have border control. The last 10 years in the EU, I think there have only been 100 prosecutions of sex traffickers. Sex trafficking is a hugely profitable business. Yes, I accept that it's not all the EU, but the EU is facilitating corporate business. It's facilitating low pay. It's facilitating zero contracts. and it's facilitating free movement of low-paid labour. It doesn't help the ordinary person.
Okay, Bill, did you want to respond?
No.
Okay, over here now.
Elizabeth Jones is outraged by corruption and quite rightly so, corruption and injustice. Well, we in the Socialist Party hold this idea, this crazy idea, that to us seems totally rational. And that is that the natural and industrial resources of planet Earth are the common heritage of all humans. Now, as far as corruption and injustice goes, well, there's a huge act of corruption and injustice in denying that fact in our society. And when you talk about poor people, why are the poor poor? It's a question that's what socialists ask. And the poor are poor because they don't own the means of production. The rich are rich because they do. Now, if we look at the means of production that we have at our disposal today, they've been developed throughout history, collectively and socially. So therefore, as far as we can see perfectly logical, that if they've been developed collectively and socially throughout history, then therefore they should be socially and collectively administered and controlled for the benefit of everyone. Now, if you want to deal with corruption and injustice, well, that is at the root of it all. You talk about women being trafficked, which is absolutely horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. Well, it's money. If we was to create a society where we produce purely and simply to satisfy human need, and not for profit, not goods and services for profit, then we would need money. And how can you have corruption and crime on that kind of scale, that kind of inhumanity, if we don't have money? You see, it's poverty that produces crime. And of course, poverty in our society is artificial. It's artificial. It's imposed on us. I mean, every human being coupled, no matter how poor you are, where you live, every human being coupled with the technology. If they had access to the technology, the productive technology that we humans have developed throughout history, they wouldn't be poor. They are because they're not. Because that ability they have is being denied. Now, I think what you're suffering is you're suffering from a case of mistaken identity. You see yourself as British. I mean, you didn't choose to be born here, you didn't choose your time, your place, you didn't choose the religion, the culture, the tradition, the education, the politics, and other stuff. And like everything in this should be included in us. We have been conditioned by our situation. And what we do is we accept that. The great thing about us human beings is that, like nothing else in the universe, we can appreciate that we've been conditioned by our situation. And in examining our conditioning, we can not only go on to recondition ourselves, we can recondition our situation. And me, I'm not English. I was born here. I'm not English. What I am is I'm a human being. And like all other human beings, I share the same ancestors as everybody else, and therefore I'm a member of the human family. So what I want, and what I'm a member of the Socialist Party, is that I want a family life where we bring according to ability and we take according to need. Now, unless we recognise and acknowledge who we are and we are true to ourselves, then we're going to get nowhere.
Any response?
No. It's a different tape.
Sure.
Okay. Over here.
Thank you both. Elizabeth, I too am a socialist, but I belong to the Socialist Party of Great Britain, World Socialist Movement, where we are hostile to all other capitalist political parties, of which you are. You're here to defend capitalism. You're worried about someone with 5 pence being taken to prison. Let me tell you the truth about what goes on in Britain. We know about the police, the dead bodies, our sons being murdered every freaking month in Britain. Nothing gets done. Nobody cares. This has been going on since the 50s, when the Emperor Windrush came here, bringing some. I was born here in the 1950s. I know about prisons. There are women sitting there, born and bred, with children, as long as they're under 2 years of age. They didn't pay the fine to the House of Lords called the BBC. Mm. They didn't pay the fine because they couldn't afford the TV licence. Mm. They were given a £900 fine. This is what goes on in Britain. Don't worry yourself about Europe. To Barry Ogle, he said it. Capitalism, I'm going to tell you very simply in few words, capitalism is owned by a handful of wealthy people. They deal with exploiting us every day. Everyone you see in the world, the 90%, the 99% of people forced, compelled, coerced into employment. Everybody works. We all do something. Whether we're disabled or blind or... it doesn't matter. Everybody does something for their own leisure, their own pleasure. But we have to give our time. We are torn from our children, then told about court because our children are truancy because mum's off at work all day and then doing another job in the evening. I've been through all this nonsense. I'm so glad there is a party that has never wavered since 1904 that we have one policy. That policy is no sympathy. No socialist would tell you that. You get no sympathy from the Socialist Party. Capitalism is killing us. It is damaging us. Have a walk around. I live in Clapham South. They're being told, the five estate agents on Abbeville Road are telling them, your house is worth £1 million. They're trying to get Jacqueline out of her flat because she can't. She's just had the rent tripled. Just tripled. I'm on Job Seekers Allowance. We are voluntary here. We're not paid politicians. We call ourselves delegates. We deal with democracy. There is no democracy when you have a government telling you, you are a follower, vote for me, and I'm going to be your leader. There's no leaders in the Socialist Party. We're not looking to lead you to the barricades or lead you to a world that doesn't exist. Capitalism is war. Capitalism is poverty. Capitalism is drudgery, misery and despair for much of the world's population. The property owners are quivering, and rightly so. Marx said it hundreds of years ago. I'm saying it today. Because if we are hungry, we're coming to you. We're not asking, we are telling you. That is my position and what I'm hearing out here. We don't hear about the Europe. We were colonised. We were depraved. We were brought down to everything. We've had enough of Europe. We want the end of capitalism. Be it the Caribbean Caucasus, the African Caucasus, the Indians, they're all owned by the wealthy. The poor are starving. Get real.
Any responses?
Tour de force performance.
Well, I just want to say that, obviously, after following the previous two, to be quite clear, that from our point of view, we are the ones engaged in practical politics, engaged in the practical analysis of the world as it is, rather than the utopian politics of UKIP, with their pie-in-the-sky nonsense about an independent United Kingdom. And that was the clear dividing line here today. Practical socialism versus utopian UKIP.
Okay. Any more hands? No more people waiting, as far as I know. Sorry, yeah, sure.
Could you tell me some more about the Tolonazis? Because I've never heard that word before.
Tolonazis, you're probably not... Well, Tolonazis.
Feminazis.
Tolonazis.
Yes, that's
these are people that usually... I would say... I'm speaking anecdotally now. They are usually white, middle-class, public school-educated males. And when we've been out canvassing or dealing with, the, you know, going out and about, these are the sort of people who will come up to you and shout off the usual fascist, Nazi, anything you want to discuss. Like, for instance, we've been discussing immigration, of course. They try to shut that down because it's deemed to be intolerant. Our discussion of that is considered to be intolerant. And for quite some while, our discussion concerning leaving the EU was considered to be heretical and intolerant. And we've had to keep on bringing these issues up because we have been faced by what we call them the Tolonazis. It's a way of shutting down debate, shutting down talking about certain issues. For instance, even with FGM, for a while, the Toller Nazis prevented any discussion of that. We had the issue of the Asian, well, I don't call them Asian grooming gangs, that's an insert, I would call them Pakistan Muslim grooming gangs. Again, Toller Nazis closed that discussion down, but eventually these people can be overcome. So that's just a nickname you have for them, the Toller Nazis.
I find it interesting that you say that public school is right.
Exactly.
I've never come across anyone who's public school educated, and we're talking private school I've never come across anyone like that.
You come out with me. You come canvassing with me. You come out and canvass with me, and you'll meet them.
Just to say, I mean, I think our position on tolerance would be reflected in the words of Tom Paine in The Rights of Man, when he said tolerance is for poops, by which he meant, of course, that toleration implies that you have the right to tolerate or to not tolerate if you want. What we stand for is human needs and not tolerance. We don't think that anyone needs to be tolerant. We think free human beings don't need to be tolerated.
Does anybody else want to speak?
Okay.
All right. Yes. Go ahead. I think we've got time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Martin stated earlier that that UKIP is pie in the sky, that the Socialist Party of Great Britain is practical politics. All I have to say is this. I mean, I appreciate, of course, you've had a fantastic indirect influence. You were set up in 1905.
04.
Oh, do apologise. You were set up in
1904.
You were set up in 1904. Of course, laudable institution. You've always supported the ballot box, always opposed violent revolution. Totally unlike SWP, totally unlike UAF. And of course, your indirect influence has had a huge impact. I mean, we're now, of course, only in 1929. Women had the vote in this country. 1975, women could have mortgages in their own name. Before that time, they couldn't. This is all part of the growing mushrooming of liberal ideas, which of the Socialist Party is part of that. However, in practical terms, UKIP started in 1993. We already have 147 councillors, about 11 MEPs. We are, whether you like it or not...
Have you met them?
I've met a few of them. I've got around all of them. Whether you like it or not, UKIP is the political energy at the moment of the country. Like it or lump it, we're driving policy. The only reason that we have the promise of the EU referendum is in 2017 is because of the fear of UKIP. The only reason that we didn't intervene in Syria is because of UKIP very, very early on, going very publicly, being opposed to intervention. I was out campaigning against intervention, and I think that was a major coup. So UKIP, you say we're pie in the sky, we're not pie in the sky, we've been very practical. We have influenced policy to a considerable and successful degree. So I can't agree with you. I wouldn't dream of insulting Socialist Party. I think it's laudable. I very much admire its aims. And I wish perhaps you'd get some more traction. I don't know how you can achieve that. But your aims are fantastic. You know, we are where we are now because of people like you publicising and spreading ideas. But I don't know if that's if that is what's, of course, it's always needed. I don't know. We have more traction. We have more power, though, as a political engine.
Yeah. Sorry, there's somebody here who hasn't spoken, I'm afraid, so we're going here first. Sorry? No, it's just that there is somebody who hasn't spoken. That was the principle that we started on, yeah?
Yes, I'm quite curious that you say you're driving policy. I'm not clear about what your policies are at all.
Well, okay. Well, I'll go through a couple of the policies that we have. Right, number one, we want immediate withdrawal from the EU. That's what is driving the promise of an EU referendum in 2017. It's because of the Tory Party's fear of UKIP and David Cameron's fear of his own position.
Yes, the other policies.
Yeah. Okay. What we say, we're paying £54 million a day to the EU. We want that money to be reinvested into this country. We are supportive of free tertiary education. We say that people should not be entering university and coming out with massive student loans. They shouldn't be frightened of entering university because of finances, and we want to plough that money back into the future
of our youth. So we want free tertiary education, we want to return to grammar schools, we want to return to the 11 plus so that working class children, poor children, can have the opportunity to have perhaps high quality education, which perhaps they wouldn't necessarily in the state system that is currently. I went to a comprehensive school, I wish I'd gone to a grammar school. So it's grammar school education, free university, immediate withdrawal from the EU, immediate withdrawal from Afghanistan. We are a non-interventionist. We say that the intervention in Iraq and Afghanistan was absolutely morally wrong, has achieved nothing, has been extremely expensive to the taxpayer, and has left an appalling legacy. We've got Abu Ghraib, we've got Guantanamo Bay, and so anti-war. We want to, obviously, we want flat rate tax, and we appreciate that that's quite controversial. We wanted a flat rate tax fixed at 31%. We say it's much easier to collect that tax, and more people were more likely to pay it. We want to get rid of national insurance contributions. I mean, I can go on and on if you want me to go on.
Yes, why is it not down when I actually look on your website? Why do I not find all this? It just says we'll refer to this or refer to that.
Well, I do apologise.
I'm quite interested that you wish to return to a sovereign situation. This is the way I see it.
Sure.
So a sovereign law, you know. And I'm quite concerned, really, about what you mean by sovereign law, what you actually mean by sovereign law.
Well, okay, I want to be, all right, as I said earlier, right, I want my laws, or I want this country to be governed by someone that A, I elect, B, I can remove, C, has to listen to me, right? So if there are any crazy laws or anything that I think is going, that I find uncomfortable, is going in the wrong direction for me, I can go and lobby and campaign against my MP or for my MP, as I have done with our dear Kate Hoey. I'm quite often in contact with her. Say what you like about her. I find her to be a very helpful woman indeed. We've always had sovereign law. This country has always had a very good history for human rights. I'm sorry, but it has. I'm sorry, it has. It has. No, in 900, we had the laws of Hywel-Dda ruled Wales. There's no death penalty. There's no torture. There was fair inheritance. Marriage was deemed to be an arrangement, not a religious sacrament. Very fair, liberal, open laws, and that was the laws of Hywel-Dda started in 900 AD. We've had, as I say earlier, we've always had habeas corpus, we've had Magna Carta, we've had the Bill of Rights. I appreciate, of course, that all countries have historical patches, which are perhaps difficult, but we have, I would say, as a country, been consistently endeavour to be fair. And that's what I want.
Hang on. Jacqueline.
Yeah. I understand. No, I can understand. I mean, particularly as you're a woman, I'm a woman. We could only vote.
I'm a socialist. We're expected as race, sex, class, gender, all this nonsense.
It's not nonsense.
Who are they for?
Through the chair, please.
Jacqueline, we have somebody waiting to speak over here. Okay.
It's not nonsense because as women we do occupy a separate political space. You have to look at that. Internationally we do. If only in a very small proportion of this world do women have lives of any meaning. And we're very lucky that we are living where we are. That our lives
have been fought for.
I accept that. Yeah, may well have been fought for, of course. But we are where we are. We have lives that have meaning. I appreciate, I hear what you say, but just look at the other places in the world that we could be living in. And we're very lucky to be living here. We have meaning. We have a relative safety. We can vote. I appreciate I only know since 1929. From 1975, we could have mortgages in our name. Before that, we could not have mortgages in our own name.
We're homeless.
Jacqueline, please.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but at least we can vote. At least you're free to walk around uncovered.
No, you're not. Your laws. There's a Vagrancy Act, 1836.
Sure.
Tell me about it.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to stop it there, because this gentleman over here wanted to speak.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh. I have a few points, I just have to say, I don't feel I've got an answer when I asked you about European justice, and how I think justice is a pillar of democracy and the free world, you know. And I think everybody, it talks about corruption and stuff, and what I'm interested in, for example, is that coffee shop who didn't pay any tax. Anyway, then sort of
Starbucks,
Europe, you know, like not exploiting loopholes and stuff, terminating now and down, because it's expensive, you know. And I think everybody should be subject to the law and nobody above it. Yeah. And that's the only way we're going to tackle corruption, you know. And it comes with a price tag, you know. And from what you were saying, you seem to say, well, we're not paying for any of it. And I'm not talking about picking sweets out of the shop.
No,
I'm talking about gangsters robbing billions, as you were saying, about the road building in Italy.
Yeah.
You know, we need to nail these people down.
Mm. Did you action? Go for the capitalist class. Those who own everything.
Jacqueline, please.
And how are we going to accomplish that without a price tag attached?
No. Now, that's, you know, those are laudable aims, of course. Justice is, the rule of law, I would say, is the fundamental of any society, whether it's socialist, capitalist, whatever, the rule of law, where people can have lives of safety and dignity. I totally agree. However, I think that we're perhaps coming at it from slightly different angles. What I'm saying, basically, is that in this country, we have had rule of law for a very long time. We have had, for a very, very long time, protections in place with regard to the criminal legal system. So, as I said, we've got habeas corpus. You cannot be detained for more than 96 hours without being charged. They have to release you. This doesn't happen in continental Europe. They can detain you indefinitely. Right? So we all there's a dissonance between our legal system, the common law system, and the codified continental system, which is the EU system, which they will eventually enforce upon us. Right? There is a dissonance. We already have a lot of protections in place. How effective they are, another thing, but we have a lot of protections in place. So for the individual, in this country, we have trial by jury, the press can't discuss you, hearsay will not send you down, you have a right to be silent, you can be silent, there's a presumption of innocence, you cannot be accused or tried unless you're in the courtroom. This doesn't apply in continental Europe, okay? So they do have a different legal system. Now, the issue I was trying to raise with the European arrest warrant is that, let's say about 10 years ago, a British judge had discretion. He could weigh a proportionality, appropriateness as to whether a charge should go ahead, whether, let's say, someone should be returned to, let's say, Sebastian from Bucharest should be returned. The British judge could say, well, hang on here, there's no evidence. What's the quality of the evidence? The charge is a bit silly, I'm not going to allow it. But that's been taken away, no matter how stupid the charge is, and with how little evidence, they have to go. Right? They have to go, because the EU wants to obviously have complete control over its movements. Of course, justice is extremely important. I appreciate what you said about the Italian mafia. It's a major problem. It's a terrible problem. I don't know what we personally in Britain can do about the Italian mafia. That is really something...
Get rid of the Lambeth mafia.
Well, it's not the Lambeth, it's not for them. Is it right and fair, though, for us to... Right, we don't really understand the complex relationship between, I'd say, the mafia, the state, and the history of that. That's an Italian slant. Right now, is it, what influence can we bring to bear? Is it right for us to go in there? You know, and why should we really? You know, it isn't really impacting on us. This is the question I always...
It's impacting on our brothers and sisters.
No, I understand that. I understand that, yes. And that's, you know, that's laudable, as I say. That's to your credit. But what can we do? How do we get, let's say, a couple of billion euros out of a Swiss bank which have been taken by... the Italian mafia. How can we do that?
You know,
Well, they are nicked. That's what I'm saying. They are now subject to life sentencing. In Italy, if you're an associate of the mafia or a mafia man, you will be sentenced for life. You do not come out of prison. You die in prison. And I think that's the way they're doing it. And we have to give great praise to the judiciary in Italy. They are incredibly brave. We had 1992 Falcone being blown up with his driver driving down the motor with a bomb that was so big it actually hit the Richter scale. So these magistrates are being killed, not regularly, but not it's not an uncommon thing for these anti-mafia judges to be. They're doing what they can, and they're incredibly, incredibly brave. But, you know, what it's... I often think about this situation as, how would I feel if, let's say this is 1973, right, and we've got the issues with the Northern Irish problem, and America decides to come in, hey, we're going to come into America, we're going to come to Britain, we're going to sort you limeys out, we're going to end the Irish problem.
Kick some ass.
Exactly. Well, do you think we'd have the peaceful situation? I mean, we've got relative peace now with Ireland. Do you think we'd have that now? Do you reckon it would be a bloodbath? We'd probably, you know, Fallujah for the rest of our lives.
Hang on, Jacqueline.
Just on the principles of justice. I mean, the situation remains as it always has been, that there's one law for the poor and as many laws for the rich as they choose to buy. And we're talking about corruption on a colossal global industrial scale. Of course, HSBC has been massively fined by the US courts for its role in international money laundering. And we are talking into the millions and billions of dollars and pounds from one of the most respectable high street banks. So, you know, you don't have to visit the back streets of Sicily in order to see what organised crime looks like. I've even seen commentators who reckon that during the height of the international financial crisis, if it hadn't been for black market transactions and money laundering, the system might have actually collapsed. It was the black market and the financial money laundering system is worth so much. It was the one thing that held the world's financial markets together. So to talk about, you know, the Italian mafia being one, they are an egregious example of a worldwide phenomenon of organised corruption.
Okay. We're coming up now to 8:45. Unless there is somebody who hasn't already spoken, who is burning to say something, anybody who's been holding on there, then I will move towards the final summing up. So anybody who hasn't spoken yet who would like to say something finally before we move on? No? Yeah? Okay. So we move then to the final summing up, and I'm going to ask Elizabeth to start off, and we'll have a look at 10 minutes each way. Up to 10 minutes each way, depending on how much the speakers want to use that. So, Elizabeth, sorry.
Okay. How we are governed is an absolute fundamental. Absolute fundamental how we're governed. And as I've said repeatedly, I want to be governed by someone I vote for, someone I can remove, and someone who will listen to me. The EU provides none of that. It is entirely undemocratic. It is an unnecessary expense in this country. It adds nothing to this country at all. There is no need for us to be in the EU. It takes from us. We are net contributors. We would be better off out. It's simply creating one, replacing one nationhood with another nationhood. Furthermore, it's bit by bit filtering in Roman law into our flexible common law system. As I've said earlier, this country has been a factory of genius, a great flowering of creative thought throughout all eras of history in this country. Of course, the same with Italy, outstanding intellectual contribution to the world stage as well. We do not want to be homogenised. We do not want to be flattened out. We wish that every country maintain its own individual characteristics and be who it needs to be. Please, let's leave the EU.
Right, I'll hopefully be equally as brief. I think that we're fortuitous in our location for this debate, being just a mile or so down the road from Tooting, because the position of my opponent is essentially that of Wolfie Smith and his cry of freedom for Tooting. After all, can Tooting control the British government? No, Tooting cannot control the British government. Is Tooting fully represented? It only has a tiny fraction, one MP out of 365.
650 in the House of Commons. Never mind all those unelected lords and the unelected ministers who form the real and the unelected civil servants who form the real heart of the governing system over here. The fact of the matter is that all nation states are essentially artificial. But for an accident of history, I'd be speaking a language now as different from yours as Dutch is from Deutsch. If anyone's ever tried to read Yorkshire dialect poetry, trust me, you wouldn't understand a word I was saying, but for the fact that 300 years ago, you know, or longer than that, the English Civil War ended one way rather than another. In fact, actually going back through my ancestry further back, I'd be speaking Gaelic now if it wasn't for the English, so you buggers. So it's all an accident of history. So to talk about one nation being subsumed under another, the fact of the matter is that in the world where we are dominated by property, where we are dominated by the concentrations of wealth, it doesn't matter in or out of the EU. We would still be ruled by the golden rule. Yeah. Them as have the gold rule. We would still be ruled by a tiny elite that would not be responsible to us and who would only, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, they can only rule in the interests of the capitalist class and capitalism at the present time. Because at the end of the day, all the taxation comes from profits. That's where the taxation comes from. It's their profits, their money, they can do with it what they want. The government can try and influence things, but if it interferes with the creation of profit, it will have to go, and it will go. And we see this time and again the world over. If you interfere with the making of profits, then all the elected politicians get removed quite swiftly. The bottom line is that the EU doesn't create unemployment. Immigrants don't create unemployment. Unemployment is created by employers. Unemployment is created by the rate of investment of capital. And it's the movement of capital up or down and its investment rate and its profitability that determines our fate. And as long as that remains the case, then we can vote till doomsday for whomever we choose. And it won't matter because the dictatorship of capital will remain. And it doesn't matter. Capital has no country. It has no flavour. It has no smell. It just takes over the entire world and uses it as it will. And to talk about ending homogeneity, ending the national stereotypes, ending the artificial restrictions of borders, creating a world held in common as the common heritage of all, that is what socialism must mean, and that is the only way that we're going to get freedom or any meaningful independence. And I'll just steal, I hope this will go on the internet, this is a horrible copyright violation, the poet Norman McCaig, and I'm going to change the words slightly, so it's even worse copyright violation. My country is only 5'8" tall. And whether I love it or not, I'll die for its independence. Thank you.